This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We continue live from spring training here in Peoria, Arizona. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. We've had such a great week out here, man, just watching some of the young guys getting prepped for the season. And as excited as we are, I know this guy is even more excited about this season coming up. He is the general manager of your Seattle Mariners. Justin Hollander is with us. How are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Would that be accurate to say you're more excited than probably anybody for this season?
Probably. I think that's fair. I'm excited to get home. I'm excited to see these guys play in real games. Really, really happy with what we've seen so far this spring.
But is it sort of like unwrapping a present? Like, yeah, you see him working here and in different aspects, and it's not always your starting lineup playing in every game. And then when you get to the regular season, this is everything you worked on in the offseason, everybody you put together. Now it's unveiled.
Yeah, I think if you've done this long enough, you learn the lessons from spring training, which is never believe anything you see out there, because somebody's going to hit zero and somebody's going to hit 600, and usually it doesn't carry over one way or the other. But this is, this part of the year, the first 40 days of the season is in a lot of ways our most relaxing time. Once the season gets going and you're into the, how can we make the team better mode when trades start happening 2 months into the season, 3 months into the season, you get very busy, and that carries over until you get to this point where, your roster basically is what it is. There's not a lot of moves to go make usually at this time of the year. So this is a time where we can actually sit back and enjoy and evaluate and find out where we need to improve. So this time of year is great, as long as you don't take what happens out on the main field of a spring training game too seriously.
Yeah, Justin, so where do you look if you have somebody coming in and he doesn't get the at-bats, or he doesn't, get the hits that you want? What are the things that you look at other than that? Because sometimes it doesn't happen in spring training games.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing you're looking at is, are the physical tools, are the skills intact? Is there something different, or if it's a hitter, is there a bat speed problem? Is there something mechanically that just doesn't look right? They made a change and they're like, oh, that's bad. We shouldn't be doing that. And how we fix that, with pitchers, mostly just stuff-based, stuff and command deliveries. Are they moving the same way off the mound? We have a lot of smart people and tools to help us with those things. Outside of that, if someone hits 220 or 250 in spring training, that's not really going to be a thing. And you have one bad outing when the wind's blowing out and it's 90 degrees here in the last 2 weeks of spring training, and your ERA goes from 3 to 9. We're not going to make decisions that way, but you just want to make sure that the players are healthy and their tools are what you thought you were getting.
We ask all the players that we talk to, hey, how much time did you take off? What'd you do in your time off? Do you get time off? Because it seems like season ends. All right, you got to dress. These guys are free agents. We know these guys are free agents out here. You start assembling. Is there a downtime at all, or is it just season ends? You're on to planning the next season.
Yeah, there's no good way to answer this question without making it seem like I'm complaining about having the best job ever. So no is your answer. Not a lot, but. I don't mind. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't do this. And, after 2 days off, whenever, much to the chagrin of my wife and family, after 2 days off, whenever I take a vacation, I'm like, what's going on with baseball right now? What can I be working on? Where's my computer? So it's
Never be off the grid, right? Even if you go on vacation, or you're looking at your phone, or you're reachable.
Yeah, I've been fortunate in the last couple of years to get some trips off. I took my wife to Italy last year, the previous January, and Jerry ordered a no fly zone around me. There is no one that's allowed to reach out. It was our 10th anniversary, and I really wanted to do something nice for her. Unfortunately, that's a hard message to broadcast to the league. So I did get a couple trade calls when I was in Florence at 3 or 4 in the morning from other teams that just didn't. I didn't tell everyone in the baseball world I was going out of the country. During the season, you can find little pockets if you're not taking a road trip with the team to go do something, especially in the summertime. I have two young kids, so making sure I get the time with them, finding a way to sneak out of town with them when they're off of school, I think is really important and healthy. But there's never a time where I just shut my phone off and say, sorry, everybody, I'll get you next week. I think that would be so irresponsible to the Mariners to do that.
Did you take that call at Florence at three in the morning?
I did, actually.
His wife's going, what are you doing?
I actually, I was up anyway because the time change was so bad. And, I just was not sleeping. And I went in the bathroom and took the call, closed the door so I didn't wake her. Yeah. But no, we didn't end up getting through the deal, but it was from a team and about a player that I couldn't possibly send it to voicemail. So I wanted to take the call and see what we could do.
What are some surprises on the upside that you've seen in this spring training?
I think the group of bullpen arms that we talked about, unfortunately, Jackson Carr went down with Tommy John, but the rest of that group has been really interesting, especially the last couple times out. They've thrown a lot of strikes. Their stuff is really good. I think the velocity we've seen, the strikes over the last week or so has been really good. Other pleasant surprises, I'm thrilled with where Dom Canzone is at. He's more physical. I think everybody's seen it out here. And the at-bats, the quality of at-bat and pitch selection we've seen from him this spring training has been really, really a big difference from what we've seen, when he first came to the Mariners. And that's something we knew we were going to have to address, and I think he's done a great job addressing it. And then I wouldn't say it's a pleasant surprise. It's a surprise in any way because we know him so well, but just thrilled to see Mitch Haniger back in our uniform. He brings so much, I think, that people don't see behind the scenes. And, physically he looks awesome right now. And I just think he's excited to be here and be back, and we're so excited to have him.
And I don't know how much you can say on something like that, but how does that come about? He's got a deal with the Giants. Obviously, things didn't go great the first year for him. But is that just you picking up the phone and inquiring, or does somebody call you? How do you deal with somebody who is under contract with another team and bringing them over?
Yeah, so it was interesting this winter. There's four or five teams that felt like they had a dozen outfielders and four or five teams that felt like they had two and yeah. Not even enough to get through a season. The Giants were one of those teams that had a heavy roster of outfielders within their 26-man and their 40-man. So when the offseason starts, typically Jerry and I will split up the teams 50-50. One of us takes 15, one takes 14, and we'll just start making calls. And it's just based on relationships. Jerry has the Giants. He and Farhan have known each other. Farhan Zaidi have known each other for a long time. So he takes the Giants, and I think that was just one of our early calls to lob in and find out, hey, what are you guys doing with all these outfielders? You can only play three at once. Are you open to talking about those guys? And it just the conversations evolved over the winter.
When you talk to a guy like Garver or Mitch, who was gone for a year and came back, or Stanek, do you get feedback from them about how different the culture is here and that kind of thing compared to where they've been?
Yeah, I think it's something that, we try and identify players we think will fit our culture. So we do a lot of background on who they are, what the types of things they believe in, both, their own approach to the game, their own approach to the workday, what they're looking for out of their next organization. It's one of the first things I ask whenever I meet with a player's agent or the player themselves is what's important to you when you come to work every day. Mm-hmm. I think if you have someone that doesn't fit with the way you do things, bringing them in on a lucrative free agent deal is just asking for trouble, because I doubt that, whether it's 26 or 40 guys are going to change the way they go about their business every day. I know that our staff and our organization is not going to radically alter how we do it. So finding players who fit what we believe in is really important. And I think, Mitch Garver is a great example. I have a long relationship with his agent. He had represented some players dating back to when I worked for the Angels. And when we connected with him about Mitch Garver early on in the free agency process, he said, I've known you and Jerry and Scott for a long time. This guy's a perfect fit. He will do great. Don't take my word for it. Let's get on a Zoom call or a Teams call and talk about it. And we got off the call and everyone was like, wow, this guy. Actually, funny enough, and this is before the Mitch Haniger deal, we got off the call and Jerry, Scott, and I stayed on the call, and all of us thought, wow, he reminds us so much of Mitch Haniger, just the way he talks about hitting, the way he talks about the game. And then to have them both in our clubhouse this year, I think it is really additive for the other position players.
Looking at this, what seems to be the finished product right now, and we said this to Jerry, to me, kind of a minor miracle that you guys put this, and I don't mean that in a bad way. This is a compliment to you guys based on you went into the offseason with a plan. You thought you had a certain budget. That certainly changed when the RSN news came out and you're not dealing with the budget you thought. And at that point, once that became public, we're all thinking, oh, great. We're going to say goodbye to Miller or Wu, or they're going to have to trade pitchers to assemble this team. And somehow you guys come in with this lineup that is decidedly deeper than it was last year, certainly. And you didn't give up any of your young pitching. Now, is this a plan that was a plan B sort of in place, or is it we have to adjust on the fly. Here's our new reality. How do we handle it?
I think that we had to be open to doing anything to get better. There wasn't like a we'll never talk about anything. We won't trade the young pitchers no matter what. We won't trade anybody no matter what. I just don't think that's a healthy way to approach the offseason. I know my great preference, Jerry and I didn't have to twist his arm very long, is how can we do this and keep the core of our team together? We have a really good core. We're not good enough right now. And I think there were some interesting opportunities that came along early in the offseason. And there's never – you never have complete information on any day of the offseason. You don't know what's coming a week from now. So you just try and make the best decision you can to give yourself the give yourselves the most options as you progress through the offseason. And I said to a lot of people when we got into the offseason in December and we're to a point where we were ready to start adding back to the core – that we have to give ourselves paths to get better. We can't just sit and watch the traffic drive by all winter. That, you know, not doing anything is not going to help us get better. We have to find a way to aggressively try and get better. And I think we did that at the end of the day. And there were some sleepless nights in there, like there where you know you need to get better, and you know the market is not totally cooperating with you in those moments. But you just stick with it. You make the next call. You try and iterate the next idea. And I think at the end of the day, we are better than we were last year. And hopefully it plays out that way.
Hey, so adding Brant Brown, tell us about what that brings. I mean, we talked to Cal, and he's like, he's not really an offensive coordinator. That's a football thing. He's a hitting coach, yeah. Right? Tell us what he adds.
I think what he adds is another voice within our room to allow – one, he's really good at his job, and I don't want to, you know, dismiss the idea that adding one coach can make a huge difference. It certainly does, and Brownie brings a lot. He brings his own unique style and personality and, you know, sort of his voice. His voice is unique, and I think it will connect with some hitters more than others, like every other coach. And I think that's a big positive, having diversity of voice in the room to try and connect with 13 guys. It's never going to be one coach, one manager who connects with 26 players or 13 position players. So having another voice that we think can do that is very valuable. I think it also frees up Jared DeHart to do to focus more on player plans and work in the cage and things that he is as good as anybody in this industry at. We think he is a huge difference maker, and having two people to do two jobs instead of, you know, JD taking on the lion's share of a lot of the work, I think will help us immensely with our development in season, with our ability to make corrections and changes. And Brownie will be a huge add for us in the game planning department and in our ability to make in-game adjustments and his willingness and ability to hold, you know, himself and others accountable. It's just I think it's a waterfall effect as much as it is Brownie alone.
Have the last 3 years, in your opinion, changed the perception of this market and this organization with outside people? I'm wondering, you know, we always, and I lose sight of this all the time, that, you know, here's this guy, they should get this guy. Well, that guy may not want to come to Seattle. He may not want to fly across the country. Maybe he's from Florida or what have you. Do you see it being more attractive to free agents now that the team's had some success, or is it still you kind of have to sell them on it? How does that go?
It's a hard question for me to answer because I've never walked in the shoes of a major league player. Unfortunately for me, every player values different things. Some people value geography relative to where they grew up. Some players value tax situations. Some players value the most money. So it's hard for me to say that there's a one-off rule. I will say, I think industry-wide, the job that our pitching group has done over the years has resonated in the industry. We get a lot of incoming calls from agents. We get reach outs from players. I would love to pitch for you guys. You know, like what you guys have done on the pitching side, like I would love to learn what you do and benefit from that. So that has definitely happened. And I think with the position player group, you know, there's a challenge with our ballpark. I think people recognize it. I also think the city is unbelievable, and most visiting players recognize that. It's an awesome place to live and play. Seattle in the summer is, it's got to be one of the best cities in the world. Yeah. And, you know, universally, for as long as I've worked in baseball as a road trip city, major league players have loved coming to Seattle because it is family friendly, because it's 75 degrees with no rain every day in the summer. It's just a great place to live and play baseball. So I don't think we have to, you know, move mountains to get players to come to the Northwest.
You mentioned the tremendous amount of success you've had with pitching, and specifically the bullpen, because it just seems like bullpens go up and down, and you guys have been very consistent, and obviously you're going out and finding good players, I mean good pitchers, but what else? What is it about your bullpen laboratory that's so good?
You probably just cursed us by saying we've been so good consistently.
Thanks, Dave.
I think the thing that we do really well with pitching, because you asked that way, but I think organizationally, is we make it simple. And there's a difference between making it simple and keeping it simple, and I'm really stealing from Andy McKay now, who taught me this. Keeping it simple doesn't work. The game is complicated. You're talking about how bodies move and how the ball moves out of somebody's hand. And that can be a very complicated, in-depth thing. But we make it simple, trying to help each pitcher understand the thing they do really well. And how do we do it as much as possible while throwing it over the plate?
Yeah.
So every pitcher, every player in our organization will have a player plan. Everybody that's in the Dominican Summer League and everybody that's in the big leagues will have a player plan sometime during this spring training. And then they will have follow-up player plan meetings about once a month all through the season. And all we're trying to do for that player is make it simple for them to understand what they do well, how they can help us win games, and how they can provide value on a roster.
Adam,
this is the one thing you do well. If this is the pitch that you have that's a separator, let's do that as much as we can. And it could be a separator because that's the pitch you throw for a strike most often. It could be a separator because that's the pitch that makes a miss. And so that's, I think our pitching group is really, really good at connecting with people and helping them build confidence in the thing they do well.
Yeah, that's what we hear from guys in the bullpen. And by the way, Adam Gresh told me that you don't believe in jinxes, so we're good with that.
I really don't, so that's fine.
Hey, you know, we have a conversation with the Seahawks GM every week, John Schneider.
Yep.
We were talking to him about the draft is coming up, and he's got a philosophy approaching the draft. We take the best player available. We don't draft for need. Obviously, it's different because that guy is going to impact your team immediately, whereas in baseball, could be years.
Yep.
What's the philosophy in looking at players? Is it hey, you know, in a couple years we're going to need a pitcher, in a couple years we're going to need a shortstop, or how do you approach a draft?
We mostly take the best player available too. You know, sometimes there's tie breaks based on demographics. You know, we have a draft model, sort of an algorithm based model that spits out a starting point. We're a soft model team, so that just gives us a place to start the conversation, and then we use context and gut feel and information that, you know, you couldn't possibly quantify to help us adjust that and move it around. And a lot of the things that are in the model take into account the demographic differences between pitchers and hitters and high school players and college players, mostly at the top of the draft. The baseball draft is so hard. If you start saying we're only taking a hitter or we're only taking a pitcher, good luck. The baseball draft's really hard. There's a lot of failure. Just take the best guy. And then, you know, if you have a particular dire organizational need or something that's a super strength and you want to try and build up the area where you might need more depth, then that can serve as a tiebreaker at certain points. But, you know, we mostly take the best player available.
In the NFL, there was recently a poll about how different teams spend and on the road and what's the experience like and what's the, you know, like the mess hall, you know, what's that like? What about on the road? Yeah. Do they have to be
the mess hall? Are they in the military?
Yeah, I know. I couldn't come up with anything else.
I'm not going to get like a code red or something after this, am I?
I watched an episode of MASH last night.
there you go. It seeped in.
No, but as far as what feedback do you hear from, like, you know, how you guys are, what, you know, what your policies are on the road, things like that?
That's a great question. So I've actually, the last 2 years when the NFLPA has done that, I've read through every single survey for every team, just trying to find things that maybe somebody does that we don't do that we could do. I give a ton of credit to Jack Mossman, who's our vice president of Major League Operations. Our guys travel great. We understand we travel more than anybody. This year we don't, only because the Dodgers and Padres go to Korea, so we're third this year. But we travel a lot, and I think we travel well. We provide our players with a lot of options, both from like a high performance end and just from a comfort end. Stay at nice places, obviously. We travel the night before if we have an off day, to give our guys a day to acclimate. We do a lot of things on the road to make sure that the experience is as good as it can be. And there's areas we would like to continue to get better with, you know, family rooms and things like that at home to make sure that the experience for the player and their family they feel good about it every day. I think that's, you know, when you just circling back, when you talk about things that can help draw a player to an environment, that's right. One of them. You know, when they feel like them and their family are treated well, that's a big deal, and it's something we've really focused on the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Are you guys, I assume you, this is probably yes, but I'm curious if you're looking at the rest of the league and you've got an idea of who the free agents to be are in each situation. Like, you know what, that guy at this position is going to be coming up next year. Are you guys always looking ahead that way too, sort of scouting your peers, the league around you?
Always. I think it's really critical to understand the situations of all 29 other teams, because their context will determine who might be available and at what price point. So that's something we constantly pay attention to. I don't think we'd be doing our jobs if we weren't aware, at least anecdotally, what might be happening around the league in 12 months, 24 months from now. And I would even say, like, dating back to when we had our rebuild, you know, we had like a working board of players, both free agency and trade, that might be available. And Luis Castillo was actually one of those names that was up on the board. Like, given where the Reds were headed and, you know, the quality of pitcher we thought he was a player that we identified like years ahead of time as somebody that we would like to have.
Hey, who's somebody besides Ty France? Because he's the guy that everybody's looking at. Canzone, you know, obviously looks physically different. But, you know, Ty went to Drivelines and, you know, we saw all the workouts and everything. But I'm assuming a lot of guys did that. Is there somebody that we're kind of overlooking that you think really did a good job in the offseason?
I think Mooney looks awesome, both physically, like how in shape he is, and also what's coming out of his hand right now. It's like midseason form, but Mooney definitely spent the winter. Last year, obviously had surgery on his foot and ankle and wasn't able to have a normal offseason. This year he did, and he came into camp like in mid-season form. He looks awesome. I think he's moving a lot better. A lot of the stuff we do behind the scenes is showing he's moving more powerfully than he did last year. So really excited about where Mooney's at right now.
Last one before we let you go. I'm just curious, as a guy who deals with salaries and everything that's going on in baseball, is there we talk about sticker shock in the NFL. Like, wow, did you see what this guy signed for? Are you blown away at times? Are you close to what you think guys are going to get? Or are there salaries that come up, whether it's Ohtani or anybody else, where you go, I didn't see that coming?
Never sticker shock.
No.
They're the best players in the world, and there always is and should be high demand for their services. We do like an off-season survey roster game, and, you know, we essentially project as a group, like the wisdom of the crowd, what, you know, we think that player will get or should get. And I always tell them, just add 25%, because the, you know, free agency is not determined by crowdsource. It's determined as an auction. So somebody is going to be the person who stands out, the team who stands out from everybody else, because there's a finite number of great baseball players in the world. And so that's, you know, I really, like, it's very rare where I'm like, wow, I didn't see that coming, because that's just, you know, that's how it works.
Justin Hollander, GM of your Seattle Mariners, excited for the season. We're all excited. Always appreciate your time, man. Thanks so much for coming over.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Hear Wyman and Bob every afternoon, 2 to 7.